Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville and Holy Family Catholic Church. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting, entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Today's topic is how to encourage teens to go to church. This episode is sponsored by Holy Family Catholic Church in Brentwood.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU FM 100.5 on your radio dial and streaming at WBOU.org. Our subject today is how to get your kids to go to church. Our guest expert is Josh Vegers, formerly Junior Youth Director at Holy Family Catholic Church. Mike and Karen Hughes, also from Holy Family, will be our guest couple to round out our panel. A great big welcome to you, our guests, and to you, our listeners. Now my monologue. One summer, two girls from our neighborhood volunteered as candy stripers at Children's Hospital. They were good friends, and I was a friend of their parents, so I decided to take them to lunch. While at lunch, they unexpectedly taught me a great lesson. We walked to a nearby cafe through the rain, darted across a footbridge, and dashed into the cafe. "Damn," Nicole gasped as she took the rain from her hair. I got my shoe filled with water. Maria flashed horrified brown eyes at Nicole. "Watch your language," she said, chastised. "There are adults around." Then they both laughed. We all three laughed. I knew Maria wasn't really shocked with her friend's use of a four-letter word. I'm sure they knew and probably used many more. Kids usually emulate the language they hear in their homes or at school. Still, I thought I'd ask about it. "Is that a bad word, Maria?" "Well, my folks don't like it, and my youth pastor is against saying words like that, and I don't think he uses them," she answered. Playing devil's advocate, I asked, "Aren't youth pastors in churches against almost everything?" "Oh, sure," Maria replied with resignation, "but they say it's best for you." "Listen," Nicole interrupted with authority in her voice, "most things churches say we shouldn't do aren't good for us anyhow." Nicole's comment impressed me, and I said, "Like what?" "Well," she said, "take four-letter words. If you use them a lot, some people, especially adults, will think you're crude, and they'll look down on you. Some even think it means you're a slut. That can get you in trouble." "It's like our minister teaches," she continued. "We're supposed to live in moderation. If you eat like a glutton, you'll get fat, and you know how bad that is for your health." "Then there's sex," she answered, without blushing. "Sex?" I asked. "What about it?" "Our parents and ministers said we should wait until marriage to have sex, and if you don't, you know what can happen. AIDS, STDs, cancer, even pregnancy." Then she looked me square in the eye and added, "Did you know that if you have an abortion, you have an increased risk of breast cancer?" "Yes," I answered, "I knew that. But I'm surprised you did. It's not a well-known fact. It's probably not even a fact. Scientists are still studying it." Lunch with Nicole and Maria was an eye-opener in several fronts. It was strikingly evident that it is tremendously important to have a friend who shares your morals and personal convictions. Nicole had Maria, Maria had Nicole. That made it easier for the girls to speak clearly and strongly about their beliefs to an adult, even on things like using four-letter words and having sex. That camaraderie also made it easier for these young ladies to talk about the issues with others, particularly those who did not share their beliefs. "Nicole," I commented as lunch came to an end, "you preach a powerful sermon. I have never thought about religion like that before. Have you, Maria?" "Oh, sure," Maria assured me. "We talk about that a lot. It started after we had a sex education class in school. There are a lot of other things we talked about, too, like drinking alcohol. If you drink in moderation, as long as you're an adult, you're okay. But if you get drunk, you can do a lot of things that aren't good for you. Think, too, about telling the truth or telling lies. Which one is better for you?" Now, you may be thinking that these girls were just telling an old friend what he wanted to hear, but they had so many good moral elements in their characters, faith being one of them, which I don't want ever to overlook, because there's no more important element than faith. All too often, we think religion is somehow against us, not on our side, that the rules are arbitrary and make life more difficult for us. Yet, as Nicole and Maria discovered, the truth is, religious rules are our best guides for healthy living. Let me quote a paragraph from the New Harvard Guide to Psychiatry that was published way back in 1988, but is still true today. Quote, "Many who have worked closely with adolescents over the past decades have realized that the new sexual freedom has by no means led to greater pleasures, freedom and openness, and more meaningful relationships between the sexes, or accelerating relief from stifling inhibitions. Clinical experience has shown that the new permissiveness has often led to empty relationships, feelings of self-contempt and worthlessness, an epidemic of venereal diseases, and a rapid increase in unwanted pregnancies. And I might add, an increased risk of depression. Religious rules are guides to curb our behaviors and to ensure our happiness. And it is far better, more exciting, and a lot easier to simply find a guide to follow and plow ahead. Life is definitely, infinitely more enjoyable without the consequence of reckless sex, overdrinking, and overindulgence. Most churches have always known and preached these lessons, but some teens, like Nicole and Maria, just latch onto that wisdom sooner than others their age. The presence of faith in children's life helps them develop that all-important moral compass that will guide them to happiness and fulfillment regardless of age or circumstances. Faith will make them stronger, less likely to get in serious trouble, and make us, their parents, even prouder of them." Now let's bring on our guest expert, Josh Vigors. Josh was director of junior high ministry at Holy Family and served a total of 12 years in various youth ministries before taking a sales position in the technology industry. He is also a volunteer at St. Matthew in their youth program and has a degree in music production from MTSU. Welcome, Josh, to Parenting Matters on WBOU FM 100.5 on your radio dial and streaming at WBOU.org.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be here.
It's great having you. Josh, your experience first as a Protestant, then as a Catholic, and now as a father should have given you a wide range view of religious education. Tell me, what have you learned about teaching moral values over these years?
I think the thing that I've learned most about moral values over the years, whether it's teaching other people's children, my own children, is that example is absolutely the best way to teach kids sort of where they should be pointed, what direction they should be going. It shapes who they are as people. The things that we say to them certainly have a little bit of impact there, but if those things that we say aren't supported by our own actions, they fall on deaf ears.
Boy, you got that totally right. I always say that if I had one piece of advice to give to parents, it would be the person you want your kids to become. And there's no substitute for that. Well, do you think that the rules are an impediment to having fun? Or are they really like lots of kids like Maria and Nicole?
I think there's a misconception that the rules are there to keep people from having fun. It doesn't help that a large section of the Old Testament, and especially, is filled with almost entire chapters that are just thou shalt not, mm-hmm. thou shalt not, mm-hmm. thou shalt not. Mm-hmm. And so it feels like a very negative sort of fenced-in environment, if you will, of this is all that you have to work with now that we've laid all these rules out around you. What I look to with that is sort of Jesus's understanding of how those rules should be implemented, and it simply came down to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, and all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And all of a sudden, when we have that shift, it moves from all of the things that we're not supposed to do into sort of an empowerment of like, here's what you need to be doing. Here's what we're called to do. Here's what we're asked to do by Jesus to help heal the broken world. The problem with kids is that they don't understand that yet.
Do you think they're overcome by the mantra of if it feels good, do it? Are we failing to teach them right from wrong? I mean, there's more right than just loving God, mm-hmm. and love, but we love our neighbor by not killing him, not stealing from him, not idolizing movie stars. All those knots are things that do help us show our love and to be loving.
I think that there's a lot to be said for that, and I think that the rules are really great guidelines. But if I don't covet my neighbor's house, don't covet my neighbor's property, don't kill my neighbor, and do all those shall nots, but I'm not engaging my neighbor on a regular basis and checking on them, making sure that they're okay, seeing if they need my help, and pouring into them, I've missed the point in a very big way. I think the guidelines give us the rules of thou shalt nots gives us great guidelines, but then Jesus's rule of loving the Lord your God and loving your neighbor gives us a direction to go.
I think that if I remember my scripture right, and I probably don't have the exact words, but I think Jesus said something. He didn't come to break the law or cast aside the law, but to fulfill it. So by loving your neighbor, he fulfills all those first things, and it makes so much sense when you put it in the range you did it. That's good. Thank you very much. So you think today's kids are developing a moral compass, or I think we have a long ways to go?
I think every kid inherently is born with a moral compass. Follow-up question is, what is your compass pointing at? Mm-hmm. I had the pleasure of teaching orienteering, mm-hmm. 3 summers in college. Oh, neat. And we knew that the area that we taught these kids on how to use a compass and a map to figure out where they were, the compass didn't point true north. It was always 7 degrees off because mm-hmm. of a large iron ore deposit that was up in Canada that pulled the needle away from it. Mm-hmm. I think our moral compass always wants to point towards Jesus, but it gets pulled away by the things that we surround ourselves with. And I think Nicole and Maria hit the nail on the head. The things that can pull your compass away from its true north are the friends that you surround yourself with, mm-hmm. the language that you choose to use, the labels that are put upon you, promiscuity, substance abuse, whether you choose to follow those rules or not, your own self-worth, even the food that you choose to put in your own body can lead your compass astray. And so part of our responsibility as parents is to make sure that our kids and our students and the people that we mentor are surrounded by peers that are helping make good decisions, adults that are willing to help mentor them with good decisions, and that we don't allow them to be exposed to music, media, photographs, movies that carry a negative message. And in that way, we help to keep that moral compass pointing towards Jesus and not pulled astray.
That's such a good point. I love that analogy. It's just wonderful. Josh, in our previous show, your wife was our guest, and she was wonderful. Just, you have a great couple.
Thank you very much.
We got running over by quite a bit, and we asked her to have you continue on her conversation. Did you have a chance to talk with her about that?
Just briefly, yes. And I think it was sort of based around the idea of as kids get older and start to go through the individualization process, that is to figure out who they are as a person outside of their own family unit, how do you get them to keep going to church? Mm-hmm. And it's difficult. It really is. As kids figure out, as they move into adolescence, how to make their own decisions, part of our job as parents is to help them make their own decisions instead of making their decisions for them. Otherwise, they reach adulthood without being able to operate on their own. And mm-hmm. the whole point of religious education, junior high youth ministry, and senior high youth ministry is to ultimately create mature Catholic Christian adults. Mm-hmm. If we're not doing that, we've missed the mark. And so I think the important thing there is to get them plugged into communities, have them get together with peers that are also attending Mass, and to help them figure out who they are as individuals and as Catholics apart from ourselves, because as long as our kids' faith relies fully on us as they move into adulthood, that faith is not going to be as strong as it would be as if they knew who they were in Christ apart from their own family. And I know that that's hard for us to hear as parents, because I love my children and I want to take care of my children, but at some point my sons have to know how to be Catholics and Christians without me, because I'm not going to be here forever. At some point, I'm going to be gone.
You know, even the birds know enough to kick those baby birds out of the nest, mm-hmm. and they fly alone. Yep. We have to give our kids nice roots. We have to give them wings as well. And I think that you made a great point. But our guest couple over here is chomping on the bit to say something. So let me introduce them. First is Karen. Karen is currently a stay-at-home wife and mother, but she does have a degree from Ashland University in Ohio and in special ed. Mm-hmm. Very challenging field, and I thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Mike is a manufacturer's rep. He has his own business. He went to Mississippi State, and they have 2 grown sons and a daughter, and they're members of Holy Family. Welcome, Karen and Mike, to our show on WBOU 100.5 on your radio dial and streaming at WBOU.org.
Thank you, Par.
Thank you, Par.
You're welcome. I'm so glad you're here. I want to start off by saying, What advice would you give parents regarding teaching their kids to be Christ-centered?
Well, Michael wants me to go first because he'll hog the show. But, we didn't go into this with a plan. You know, we got married, we had children, and it was just, you know, wonderful. But we were, you know, we're setting out on a journey. We didn't really know what would be down the road. So to avoid sounding like a broken record, I mean, it is your actions, I think, that really impact your children the most. We certainly didn't sit down and do rosaries at night or Bible study in the evening. You know, we just more or less, we went through CCD when our kids were in the confirmation age and made sure that we were the teachers that, provided them some kind of learning for those classes. We got involved in the community where we went out and helped seniors with either Meals on Wheels or people that were, in their homes and couldn't get out, we'd visit them. So, I mean, this wasn't all intentional, I'll say, but when looking back, I would say that, you know, these things that we got our children involved in and what we thought together were important kind of made an impact on them growing up. But
do you have any additional comments?
Well, I would echo what Josh said about the first starts with us to be able to model. My father continually talked about preaching the gospel and when absolutely necessary using words, and that was his witness for us, he and my mother's witness, through their faith and their marriage. And so that's really what we were trying to model. But the thing, I was listening to Josh talk, the three things that we were trying to do even right through college was to be present, to be involved in their lives, to bring them to church, and to meet their friends, which is, again, I think echoes what Josh was talking about. Maybe it wasn't as intentional as we probably should have been, but to model, to be present, to bring them to church, and to be involved with their friends, to know who they were hanging around with, was important to us.
There was a recent study by a couple of college professors. They found that 83% of college freshmen reported attending church frequently at the beginning of the school year. But by the end of the school year, only 57% continued to do so. Another study found that students who attend church services weekly scored higher on standardized tests in math, reading, social studies, and science. Yet, knowing all these things, kids still didn't go to church when they leave home. Is there a solution for that? You want to join in too, Josh, if you like.
I'm surprised by the first statistic.
Yeah, so was
because, I. Because our experience was that our kids, when they first got to school, they were there, and it was an opportunity not to go to church, which was a new freedom that they didn't necessarily select to go right back to church. But then as you struggle through college and they really came back to their faith while they were in school because of the struggles of being in college and the temptations and all the things that are involved. So that wasn't our own personal experience.
My wife says that she had a friend in college, a roommate for a while, and she said she'd spend the night before tests in the chapel. And she don't you think you should study? Oh, I just can't study. I just have to pray. And Mary said, well, I think I pray and study. And the mantra that my wife has is, work like everything depends on you, but pray like everything depends on God, because we are in this thing together.
That's a Crucial power phrase, by
the way.
Just so you know.
I did not know that.
I think we come to that realization, too, as we get older.
Yeah, isn't that
you know,
true?
when you're young and you're, all of a sudden you cut the ties with mom and dad and you're at college, it's like, okay, who are my friends going to be? You know, what are we doing tonight? You know, and it's just more about the social issues and not so much about the spiritual when they first get going.
How do we teach kids that religion isn't against everything, Josh?
I think example, and I know that we've been hitting on it over and over again, but the example that we can set is by making sure that our church experience doesn't stop as soon as we hit the doors leaving church.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I attended a church once as a speaker years and years ago and noticed as we were leaving, there was a big sign over the doorways that left that said, entering the mission field. And it's that mentality of like, the reason you come to church is to receive the sacraments, to be poured into and to be filled up so that we can go out into the world and be Christ to people on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the biggest struggles in the United States, and I think in the Southeast in particular in the Bible Belt, is overcoming the idea that church is a social thing. That you attend because of certain expectations within the community, and that faith has no impact in a lot of ways because we compartmentalize church into something that only happens Sunday mornings, Sunday nights, maybe sometimes Wednesday nights, but it doesn't spill out into the other 5 or 6 days of the week.
Well, you know, that's a very interesting concept. One of the men in our Friday Mornings book club said that when he came to move to the South, his parents from Michigan said, well, you're going to have a hard time being Catholic in the South. And he said, why is that? Well, because there are so few churches and so few Catholics there. And he answered that being in the South makes it easier to be Catholic because everybody goes to church down here, and maybe not everybody, but it's much more of a thing. Church is something in people's lives down here, which it isn't in many other places. I mean, first you move into a new neighborhood, and the first question your neighbor asks you, have you found a church yet? And that gives you the opportunity to not deny your faith, but to say, yes, I'm Catholic, I go to church here, or no, I don't have a church. But, I mean, it makes it easy to be affiliated with a church. And you're right, some churches are too involved in fellowship and not enough with theology. But we need that, like I talked earlier, both the feeling of belonging to a Christ-filled organization and the feeling that you know what's right from wrong. The brain, you mentioned that, the brain and the heart.
Yeah, it's more than just social, though. It's a feeling of being, I hear a lot of people talked about, I'm not filled when I come to church now. You know, it's not just the social aspect of it. It's, you know, I come to be fulfilled and served when I come to worship and when I come to be part of a church. And that's missing the point, frankly, I'm here to worship and to adore, to receive Eucharist in case of being a Catholic, and to serve. And to be sitting there and waiting to be filled, you're always going to come up short. So that's the most recent thing I hear mm-hmm. in the people that I talk mm-hmm. to, old and young.
The very first homily that I heard Father Mark give at St. Matthew was when the wise men came to see Jesus. And of course, they come through Herod, they see Herod, Herod gives them the charge of go and find out if this is the guy, and then come back and tell me so I can do something about it. And they go through Herod, they get to Jesus, they recognize who Jesus really is, and then they go back by a different road. And Father Mark's point was, if you go to see Jesus and you go back the exact same way you came, you're doing it wrong. And I think that maybe the problem that we run into, especially as Catholics, because we have the Eucharist, if you come into church on Sunday and you receive the Eucharist and you leave the exact same way you came in, you're doing it wrong.
You're doing it wrong. That's just like Father Justin gave a sermon with the same approach. He said when he was in seminary, there was a big sign on the wall, to make every Mass your first Mass. And he went on, he says, so every day, he says, I say my first Mass. And he says, I'm asking you, when you come to church, when you come to Mass, when you receive the sacrament, you know what the sacrament really is. Just like it was the first time and the last. Well, I thought it was really powerful. So, I mean, it's some sermons you just remember, don't you? Do you think that Maria and Nicole were like other kids?
I don't think so. I don't think I'd be saying damn and probably be as transparent with my feelings about, you know, drinking and sex with someone who is their elder, as well as, I mean, how well did they know you, actually?
Yeah, they were neighbor kids. Not really kids. Well, I mean, but I knew their folks.
But obviously they felt very comfortable. Mm-hmm. And like you said, they had the support of each other mm-hmm. that gave them, you know, that enabling them to be so
My wife
honest.
Was talking to a friend of hers in church last Sunday, and her friend's daughter. They were talking about the country music fest was going on, or whatever, this fan fest. And Mary said, did you go to any of that stuff? And she said, oh, no. She says, I like music, but I don't really like the crowd. And she's a graduate from college this year. Mm-hmm. So I'm not into that kind of stuff. And, you know, I think that that's a rarity, but I also know her folks and they're both very committed, God-loving Catholics. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes, I don't know what college she went to, not that it matters, but I guess it does matter. But she had the moral compass directed at the right mm-hmm. source.
I think the most difficult part of parenting and mentoring young people is starting to recognize how our role changes with kids as they become adolescents and then become adults. You know, we are the captain of their ship when they are children. And then at some point, we realize that we are the navigator. We're still helping to shape the moral compass, but our kids are going to start making decisions for themselves. And then at some point, and I think this is where I am with my folks now, is I'm the captain of my own ship, and I've got a great family, and my parents have become first mates on that ship. Great. And they're the ones that I look to and rely on for continued advice and support. But at some point, and I know that I'm going to have to do this with my own kids as they grow up. I mean, goodness, two of my boys are already halfway to adulthood, and it's happened in just the blink of an eye.
Got that right.
At some point, I have to realize that I don't get to make decisions for them forever, and I have to bring them into the process of, here's how you do this. Here's how you weigh out the good and the bad, and here's how you pray about these things, and here's how you seek peace in these situations to move forward and let God guide you, because it's going to be just another blink of an eye, and they're going to have to be doing those things on their own.
You know, when I was in practice, I used to ask kids, when they became high school kids, said, do you think your folks are more strict than other folks? And I got one of two answers. Some of the kids would say, well, they used to be really strict, but now that I'm in high school, I mean, they just let me do what I want. Mm-hmm. And other groups would say, well, my folks were pretty lax when I was a kid, but boy, they really got slam down on me now. I can't do anything. I investigate a little further, and the first group of kids never got in trouble. And the folks didn't have to, because they gave them good basic training. And the second group were the ones who were in trouble, of course. And when you turn them over, it doesn't happen in a day, but it starts when your kids are your age and they're given more and more responsibility. Well, thank you all very much. I really appreciate you being here, but it's time to wrap this show up. It's been a great pleasure talking with you on WBOU FM 100.5 on your dial and streaming on WBOU.org. But before I sign off, one quick story. If you moved from Green Bay, Wisconsin, and continued to be a Packer fan, how would you transmit this loyalty to your kids? It's just easy. Just be a fan. Watch the games, get some Packer caps, some jerseys, maybe even a cheesehead or two. Talk about the Packers at dinner time. Let your kids express their own opinions. Hey, maybe get some tickets and take a road trip to Wisconsin. And by the time they're teens, they'll be fans. But we need to get as excited about religion as we do about football. We need to go to church, have some religious articles around the house, read some religious books, say some prayers, talk about the saints, other than just the New Orleans saints, and involve your kids in religious discussion at the dinner table. Then you'll soon have kids who, like their parents, are involved in their church and will become leaders in high school, college, campus ministry, and in life. Now here's your homework. Have a conversation with your family about what evidence you have in your home that shows you are a fan of Catholicism. And ask your kids what things the church says we shouldn't do aren't good for us. Then go to my website, www.parentingwithdrparr.com, and tell us about your conversations. And if you'd like to be a guest on Parenting Matters, add a short bio and tell me what you would like to discuss. Thanks for listening, and may God continue to bless you and your family.
Thank you for listening to Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue, brought to you by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville and Holy Family Catholic Church. For more information about Dr. Parr, visit his website at www.parentingwithdrparr.com.